all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, July 17th, 2024. It's another beautiful day to have you here up north. Live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the Civic Media app, watching us on Facebook or YouTube, or listening later on by podcast, we're glad to have you along here at midweek, where I've got a question for you. Remember Nikki Haley? I know the natural follow-up is, which Nikki Haley are we talking about? The Nikki Haley that existed ever so briefly from something like, I don't know, February to April, reminding us, or at least trying to remind fellow Republicans of everything that Donald Trump really is and stands for. Whatever happened to her? She seemed to be going places, or at least to have a path toward that. And then you saw the speech that she made and the speech that Ron DeSantis made at the convention, and how Donald Trump made sure to be there, to sit there like in the Coliseum, you know, and to watch his vanquished foes be paraded in front of him and pledge their loyalty to him. And that's our day two summary of the Republican National Convention. If you'd like to talk about it at all, our number is 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can call the number or text it. If you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can leave a comment in the comment section. We'll see it, maybe put it up on screen, and maybe respond to it. You can also send us an email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Let's see, we're also going to have our climate check. So we'll do a little convention climate check coming up with Melissa Baldoff today, because there's been some talk, and we've gone over it here in our climate check segments, that there are an increasing number of Republicans and conservatives who understand the gravity of the climate situation and or understand the economic potential of embracing newer, cleaner, American-produced energies. Is that kind of talk gaining traction at the convention overall? We'll talk to Melissa about that to see if the Republican record matches the new moderate rhetoric. Then in our second hour, longtime political strategist Joe Trippi, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, will give us his perspective on whether the messages at the Republican convention are landing with moderate voters. And then our homeroom segment features Jennifer Berkshire, author of The War on Education. And Todd Alba will talk about the experience of doing his radio show from inside the convention site. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot will have our forecast as well. That's an hour from now. Temperatures right now across Wisconsin include 59 here in Chippewa Falls, 54 in Hayward. It's 51 in Park Falls, Wausau 64, Green Bay 63. La Crosse is at 61 degrees, Wisconsin Rapids 59, Oshkosh a very comfortable 65, Madison 63, and in the greater Milwaukee Metroplex, it is 63 degrees in downtown Waukesha, where we find one Greg Bach joining us this morning. And as I was talking about the rhetoric, Greg, I need to find just the right email, because Christina Lurie, she puts the newsletter together. She gets the responses as well and sent me this one. Let's see, from Richard. I don't need to share your last name on the radio, Richard. Simply writes by email, "Go to hell, Pat Breitlove." Okay, well, thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Richard. May we call you Richard? So, on that happy note, Mr. Greg Bach, who nobody ever tells to go to hell, how are you this morning?
Yeah, what about me?
What's a guy got to do to be told to go to hell at 6 o'clock in the morning?
I think climate change is real. I think that it's a problem. I think it's man-made. Come on, Richard, hit me with your best shot. I'm doing well. It's nice and sunshiny here in Waukesha. The sun's coming up. It's no fog. No, it doesn't even look like clouds in the sky. It's nice and cool too. It's like you said, it's 62 degrees. It's lovely.
Yeah. It is. It's just a good summer day, and nice to have the windows open again. We get the summer cycles where you get all kinds of heat, and then some days you get just these pleasant mornings, and it just makes it so wonderful to be here in Wisconsin. I regret to inform you, however, that Derek Van Orden is at it again.
Oh, great.
He's been involved in another kerfuffle.
Which children did he yell at this time?
Yeah, well, it's something like that, exactly. Derek Van Orden said that he was standing in line to enter the Republican National Convention yesterday. And he says, this was on Twitter, his statement is, I was assaulted by what appeared to be a member of the pro-Hamas group Code Pink. It's not really a link there, but that's okay. A nearby police officer witnessed the assault, and I understand they have been arrested. This appears to be an incident of political violence, and I will never tolerate this. Regardless of the severity of the violence, political violence is political violence. Republicans have been intimidated and targeted for years, including the attempted assassination of President Trump, and we will no longer stand by and allow lawlessness. There's no place for political violence in this country, and I have repeatedly called for people who choose this path to be prosecuted to the greatest extent of the law. Nothing will change until these people are held accountable. Signed, Derek Van Orden, on the grounds of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021. This sounds like a savage attack, Greg. I mean, I don't know who this person from Code Pink was, but must have been like, I don't know, maybe a former wrestler. They must have just pummeled him.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the statement from Code Pink. In a troubling incident at the Republican National Convention, Code Pink's Palestinian campaign organizer, and they list her name here, and there's a picture of her, and she is, shall we say, diminutive. She is not a former professional wrestler, near as I can tell, was unjustly detained by police on accusation of assaulting a member of Congress. While peacefully waiting in line to enter the event, she was intentionally bumped into by a bald white member of Congress who tried to shove past her. Despite not reacting to this, she was falsely accused of alleged assault by a police officer from Texas on the scene. No charges have been filed as we write this statement. Notably, two other Code Pink staff members ahead of her in line passed through without any issues, raising concerns of racial profiling. It is a microcosm of the misogyny at the RNC that the more gentle, nonviolent woman, the only Palestinian in line with our group, is assaulted, and that even when she did not respond, she was the one who was arrested. One witness who did see this described it as basically a hip check. And it's just not clear if Derek Van Orden was trying to work his way past her and hip checked her, or if she saw this guy trying to come past and she kind of took a step into his way. Either way, if that's all it was a bump, and a police officer on scene says, you're the one that initiated the bump, you're in trouble. That's all fine. It's just that for Derek Van Orden's statement to call it an incident of political violence and links it to the assassination, and Republicans have been intimidated and targeted over a hip check? Derek Van Orden, get over yourself, please. That's all we can ask for, because this level of drama in your statement does not help you.
No. And let's also be very clear. What happened on Saturday was awful. No one disagrees with that.
Yep.
I think it's been pretty much standard that everyone says that true political violence is unacceptable and not the way to make change. But for him to use that situation and to use such victimous rhetoric, victimous is not a word, I just made it up, but to make himself such a victim by using that rhetoric over what seemed to be bumping into someone. Well, I mean, it's really just on brand for Derek Van Orden. He's such a sad boy baby. He just cannot hit. And the thing is, all right, man, now get back to work. Can you? Every time I think of him, all I think, are you helping the farmers yet? Are you helping the farmers yet?
He's taken farm tours, and local TV stations love to talk about his farm tours. And a couple of weeks back, he honored somebody, a veteran, for their 107th birthday. And I went back and looked through these local TV stations, and I don't see any of the coverage of the things that he says on social media, the insults, the trying to cut off Wisconsin farmers from entire global markets. No, I don't see any of that. So, no, he has not been helping the farmers. Instead, he's been just continuing the, you know, the white guy grievance gravy train. The woman who was detained the video that I saw, which was after the incident, you had a couple of other Republicans dressed in their suits, you know, waiting in line, yelling, "Go back to Gaza." We don't know that she's from Gaza. No. We don't know where she's from.
No.
So, but you can clearly hear them, and the camera pans over and shows them, you know, "Go back to Gaza." Kinder, gentler Republican convention? I think not.
No.
Meanwhile, the three Democrats who hope to unseat Derek Van Orden gathered at UW-Eau Claire last night for their final candidate forum. Civic Media was on the scene, and with convention coverage, rather than airing that live and having the forum get lost in the shuffle, it's been recorded and it will be played back on several Civic Media stations in and around the 3rd Congressional District. And as soon as we get the details on that playback of that candidate forum, we will pass that along to you. Did you dip your toe into any of the All-Star game last night?
I did not.
I tuned in just to see if William Contreras and Christian Yelich would hopefully have some fireworks. They did not. Both went 0-for-2. But it was still fun to watch Paul Skeens, this rookie pitcher.
Yeah.
He was amazing. And then I did not know about the pitcher from Oakland, whose name is escaping me right now. He too had a pitch of like 103 miles an hour, like the fastest pitch ever measured in an All-Star game. These pitchers are just incredible that they
Mason
now have
Miller.
Here. Yes. My goodness.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And then the final score was 5-3, American League winning. The only National League scoring was a 3-run home run from Shohei Ohtani. No surprise there.
Shocking.
That totally checks out. For the AL, first it was Juan Soto who hit a 2-run double. And then later it was Jaron Duran from the Boston Red Sox who hit a tie-breaking 2-run homer, and that was the difference in the American League's 5-3 victory over the National League yesterday. So we continue in the All-Star break, and the Brewers will be back in action on Saturday in Minnesota to take on the Twins Saturday and Sunday, and then they will be at Wrigley Field on Monday next week for a 3-game series against the Cubs. We'll unpack some more of the news from the Republican convention and our climate check, the Midwest Farm Report, so much more still ahead just this hour on Up North News Radio. Remember, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Be right back. I see you out there doing your little Charlie Brown dance, you know, your head either going this way and that way, or putting your chin way over here and then way over here, shuffling your feet. Jazz pianist Vince Guaraldi was born this day in 1928, noted composer of music for the Peanuts series. Born in San Francisco back in 1928, passed away in 1976 at the age of 47 due to a heart attack, but before he left, gave us an amazing library, a catalog of music from Charles Schulz's cartoon about Charlie Brown and the rest of the Peanuts gang. More in today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. A reminder that there is an election across Wisconsin on August 13th. It's a primary election in many instances, like the 3rd Congressional District Democratic primary we talked about a moment ago. But there is also an important statewide referendum that would amend the Constitution on there and allow Republican legislators to block more federal aid from being distributed as designed to Wisconsin residents. To learn more about the election that's happening on August 13th, where to vote, what all is on the ballot, are you registered, how to get registered, go to myvote.wi.gov. Again, myvote.wi.gov. Special Republican convention coverage all this week from Civic Media. News director Terry Bell has been there during the 7 p.m. hour for special reports. Todd Alba's show has been live from the convention site from noon to 2, and we will talk to one Todd Alba a little bit later on in the program and find out how things have been going there. In terms of what to talk about from the convention, there's no shortage of material. It's just a matter of how do you possibly rank this? I know that Eric Hovde spoke. I feel like maybe we'll get to that later, because again, it was just a brief, hi, I'm Eric Hovde. I'm running for U.S. Senate. There may have been a sound effect of him stepping on a rake. That can be neither confirmed nor denied. But I do want to play some audio from Ron Johnson, not from his convention speech, but from a follow-up interview yesterday, where Ron Johnson is as on brand as Ron Johnson gets when asked about the shooting at the Trump rally on Saturday. Give a listen to the very elements that make Ron Johnson the politician he is. We'll identify those elements right after this clip.
Obvious failure on the part of Secret Service. You know, we're hearing, and it's reasonable to assume this because President Biden appointed all these people not to run their agencies for the mission that they've established for, but for DEI, yes. For equity. No, you know, so
30 days.
And it sounds like that's exactly what this director of the Secret Service is all about. Right. So more focused on DEI than actually accomplishing the mission. There's all kinds of rumors swirling in terms of requests made for beefed up security. You know, detailing Secret Service agents, you know, diverted for Dr. Jill Biden as opposed to President Trump. We'll find out what the truth is, but you got those rumors swirling. We need to get to the bottom of that. So
there it is. Did you catch them both? One, of course, is the thinly veiled misogyny and racism of saying that somebody was hired to run the Secret Service just because she's a woman, and that therefore a woman can't run the Secret Service, according to Ron Johnson. But also the other thing that he never fails to do is to rumor monger under the old guise of people are saying,
mm-hmm.
Greg, people are asking about whether Joe Biden, you know, eats children's body parts for breakfast. I don't know, but I'm just saying people are saying.
I'm reading that they're saying that liberals huff the heads of babies to sniff their power. And, you know, this is what people are saying. I don't know. I'm not sure. We're looking into it. There's lots out there, though. There's lots out there.
And that's what he gets away with. And you say, well, Pat, why'd you play the clip then? To make sure you've got the playbook so that when you're hearing Ron Johnson in the future or somebody's talking about something, just always look for that. You know, people are saying, people are asking. It's a dead giveaway every time that he doesn't know. He's simply looking to plant information. We did mention that Nikki Haley spoke. I like the headline from the Associated Press. Donald Trump is feted by his former rivals in a show of Republican unity after rally shooting. Because apparently it would not be a good headline to say that the decaying corpses of the campaigns who failed against Donald Trump were forced to parade on stage and pledge undying loyalty to him.
Yeah. So. Just like his vice presidential pick. What? Sorry. I have a lot of thoughts on J.D. Vance.
Well, let's talk a bit more about J.D. Vance, shall we? There's a very good article written in the Public Notice newsletter by Noah Berlatsky, who gets into this whole notion that, again, the media loves to play up the populism. And Noah writes, so what is it about J.D. Vance that leads the media to frame him as a muscular populist who frightens billionaires? Is Vance fighting to restore the expanded child tax credit, which slashed childhood poverty before it expired? Does he want to repeal so-called right-to-work laws to empower labor? Of course not. Vance's populism is a shallow, cynical branding exercise. Like Trump and other Republicans, his populism is paper thin. He views the working class with contempt and embraces policies that would entrench poverty and gut social mobility. Vance has benefited throughout his career from the gullibility of a mainstream media, never tiring in its search for a white working class whisperer. Vance is a venture capitalist. He stopped being anything like working class long ago, and no one should be fooled by his transparent phoniness. In discussing the issues facing working class people, J.D. Vance doesn't dwell on deindustrialization or decades of anti-labor policy, not on the bipartisan assault on the welfare and safety net in the 1990s, not the devastation of the 2008-09 fiscal crisis. He blames the entrenched poverty not on the wealthy and the powerful, but on the poor and the powerless. And I would add parenthetically, God forbid anybody who's struggling have their own cell phone or have a TV of their own, because apparently that is a sign that you're not humble enough and therefore must not really be that destitute. Vance was telling right-wing ghouls and wealthy bosses what they wanted to hear, that if people don't take a crappy job, it's because they lack character, not because owners aren't paying enough. If people are trapped in generational poverty, it's because they're broken and immoral, not because unions and the social safety net have been gutted. All of that by Noah Berlatsky, writing in the Public Notice newsletter. And I'm glad some people are noticing, but again, just from reading the Associated Press headline, you're going to continue to see this fake populism given the benefit of the doubt. And we're just going to be here to keep calling it out.
I've never bought the idea when everyone's like, oh, Trump is a populist. No, he's an elitist.
Yeah.
He's an elitist. He doesn't care about the population. He doesn't care about the people who vote for him. He thinks they're nothing.
Oh, or less.
Or less, yeah.
And maybe we would hear something different if we heard from some other folks in the Republican Party. But we're not hearing from George W. Bush, a two-term president. We're not hearing from Dick Cheney, Sarah Palin, Mitt Romney, Dan Quayle, Paul Ryan, Mike Pence, just a few of the former and living Republican office holders and presidential or vice presidential nominees who won't be speaking at the convention. And one more. Melania Trump.
Yeah.
Where has she been? Anyway, we will have our climate check report with Melissa Baldoff, and then an update, an unfortunate update on our national anthem singer from the Home Run Derby. All coming up. You're up north. Welcome back. It's time for this week's Climate Check Republican Convention Edition with Melissa Baldoff. Melissa, hello. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, doing fine. I'm coming back to a familiar theme, but only because, again, you know, there are these competing narratives around the Republican National Convention. And I'm just going to read two newspaper headlines and then give the same point that I've given several times. First, from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, how the Milwaukee Republican National Convention could open the door to conservative engagement on climate change. And from the New York Times Climate Change newsletter, climate and the Republican Convention, here's where the party stands on global warming, energy, and the environment. Well, to read the former is to indicate that there might be some cracks in the opposition to even acknowledging climate change, much less doing something about it. The latter is much less optimistic. And Melissa, we're a couple days into the convention now. Where do you fall in how you're evaluating things with the grand old party?
Well, I mean, I think you don't have to look much further than who Donald Trump chose to be his running mate. And obviously, you know, it's worth noting that he needed to pick a new running mate because his old vice president isn't supporting him.
Oh yeah, he's not available. That's right. Yeah.
Right. But when you look at who Donald Trump chose to be his running mate, J.D. Vance, is somebody who is going to be a very, very, very good friend to big oil and someone who, you know, is skeptical of climate change and is somebody who is going to be, you know, a real step backwards and will be, you know, right there with Donald Trump in, you know, putting the interest of fossil fuel companies ahead of what's best for public health and the environment and, you know, what we can do better. So, you know, I think that kind of starting from the top, that's what we see. And, you know, like reading that, seeing that headline, reading the story, I would love if conservatives would want to engage on climate change here in Wisconsin, you know, even locally, but in Wisconsin, at the national level, anywhere, because climate change is not going to only impact the areas of the country that believe in it. It's impacting everyone and everywhere. So I would love for Republicans to join in the fight in addressing climate change, but I just don't think that we have seen the action ever really, you know, ever really happen.
Certainly not at the top of the party. And the New York Times notes aptly that in the opening night of the convention, Monday night, the closest thing to a mention of global warming came from Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, a right-winger who derided what she called the Green New Scam and said it was destroying small businesses, which, of course, is not even remotely true. But what it tells me, Melissa, is that something we've talked about repeatedly is probably still going to be just talk for a while. And that would be Republicans and conservatives understanding that even if you are a climate skeptic, you cannot deny the benefits, the economic benefits, if not the climate, you can't, the economic benefits, the jobs, especially the rural jobs that would come with embracing a new sector of the economy that's coming, whether they want to acknowledge it or not.
Exactly. You know, that's something that we've talked about so many times, that the benefits and so many of these jobs that are being created around the country and in, you know, in states like Wisconsin are going to rural communities. They're not just going into larger cities, you know, where some in the past have said, oh, well, they're just going to go into cities where there are Democrats. No, they're going all over the place, and especially into rural communities. And the other factor there too, the other side of the economic piece, is that some of the damages have been very concentrated and pronounced in rural communities who have been hit very hard by some of the worst effects of climate change when it comes to flooding and extreme droughts that are damaging crops and making it harder for farmers and producers to make a living. So, you know, being able to be part of the economic benefit is really important to people in those communities because they've been harmed by the worst effects of climate change in a pretty big way a lot of times.
I'm just looking at the New York Times article, and it's noting that as recently as 2020, J.D. Vance said in a speech at Ohio State University, we have a climate problem in our society. He praised solar energy, but that many of his public opinions on this and so many other things have now changed. And yet, as we know, there are Republican members of Congress who understand the significance of this. The question becomes, and this is the question I've been asking all week, is the Republican Party going to try to put on a moderate facade at the convention? Or are they just going to rip the mask off and say, we are full-blown extremists, this is who we are, drill, baby, drill, and nothing but drill? And J.D. Vance's record is clear. He's been sponsor of legislation to repeal part of the Inflation Reduction Act, repeal federal tax credits for electric vehicles, even though the article notes his state has seen $12 billion in clean energy investment since the law passed, including for electric vehicle manufacturing. But none of those things supported by Vance have become law. There is just not a lot of optimism here, despite what some are seeing from the grassroots of the party. Melissa, I don't know that we're going to see any significant change between now and November. Maybe after January, when there's a new Congress, a new administration, perhaps, or the same administration. But between now and November, not so much.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Unfortunately, you know, we have seen so many people, Republicans who have voted against the IRA, though, you know, get out there and, you know, trumpet the benefits, right? When there's a big project that's shovel ready, or when there are jobs coming into their communities, they're really happy about that. And they, you know, conveniently will leave out the fact that they voted against this legislation. But I think that when you see, you know, somebody like J.D. Vance, he has really I would say it seems to have radicalized and become very much a true believer, or at least a true believer. Who knows how true his beliefs are, because they've changed quite a bit, and maybe they are as true as they need to be politically expedient for him. I don't know. I don't know him, so I can't say. No. But you know, they seem pretty solid right now, and pretty solidly against what we need to actually happen. To say that climate change is not a threat, you know, to our environment, to public health and safety, and to our economy is an absolutely absurd position to hold.
And yet, chipping away at this, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article, would be groups like Citizens for Responsible Energy Solutions. Heather Reams is the group's president and says, quote, "I think now Republicans recognize that they can be pro-clean energy, recognize the climate is changing, and keep their Republican credentials. Why don't we engage in this in some way and recognize the value of American homegrown energy?" And that really gets to the heart, Melissa, of when we say, why is this like it is? The reason that we keep coming at this, the reason it's, you know, a mystery, if you will, is that Republicans are not against new jobs. They're not against research and development, except in this area, which is so puzzling, because the only real explanation, I mean, you and I both worked in politics long enough, is that the money coming from the fossil fuel industry or the automotive sector, wherever it is, has got to be so good that you would turn your back on something that a growing number of conservatives are saying, hey, we should actually be embracing this.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there are two reasons for why Republicans broadly, especially at the top, would not be embracing this. One, like you said, is the money coming from fossil fuel companies and the other, you know, those other kinds of energy interests. And the other is politics, because they have decided that going along would be some kind of victory for Democrats that they don't want to hand to Democrats. And it could be one of those. It could be both of those. I think that the likely answer is that it is a little bit of both. I think money is the biggest motivating factor there. But it's incredibly disheartening to think that, you know, that we could be making all this progress, but for this special interest money and the idea that there are some Republicans who just can't stomach the idea of Democrats getting a win, or even just a perceived win.
When it shouldn't be. It's not a win for Democrats. It's a win for the planet.
Energy independence, to reduce our reliance on, you know, foreign energy. You know, the line that you said from the woman with CRES, that's, you know, really, really an important piece of this, to have that American homegrown energy. And it's just, you know, it's really unfortunate that there aren't more Republican leaders who want to stand up and be a part of that.
So here's one more. Carly Matthews, the Vice President of Communications for the American Conservation Action Coalition, said that this doesn't mean conservatives don't care about the environment. She says she sees the pride that conservatives take in caring for the earth and passing it down to future generations. And so in her outreach efforts, she says in the Journal Sentinel, she prefers to, quote, start with conservation or stewardship and then ease into climate change. Those words ring hollow, Melissa, when you get to what we've said before. The current Republican position in Congress is to gut conservation and land stewardship programs. There's just no there to back up these aspirations of the few conservatives that claim to care about the environment.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that's also a little, you know, disingenuous when you're talking to folks in rural communities who, you know, conservation and stewardship, that's that's their life. That's what they've been doing. And what they need is some support and some help and some buy-in from leaders in state and federal government to do what they can't do. And you know, they are not unaware of the fact that the climate is changing. And I hear that from folks. I would hear that when I would visit farms with Governor Evers. We would hear from people, you know, people would say the weather's changing, we got to do things differently. So it is not lost on people in rural communities that the climate is changing, that the weather is changing, and that they have to go about doing things differently. They don't need someone to tell them that they care about conservation and stewardship. They need the federal government and the state government to show them they value those things and that they are going to be partners in doing what's beyond that to protect our land and water and air for future generations.
My closing note is based on something else Carly Matthews of the American Conservation Action Coalition had to say. She said conservatives have shied away from climate change in the past, in part due to what she called the doom and gloom approach taken by the left. And I'm not saying that's entirely correct, but what I am saying is if there's one thing we have hit repeatedly in this segment is that, yes, there is a crisis, but there are also opportunities. There's an economic aspect of this that needs to be talked about as well. And we wish all the conservatives luck out there that are trying to keep this point going. Melissa Baldoff, as always, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll talk to you again soon. We should also note that day three of the Republican National Convention today, we will be hearing from vice presidential nominee, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. And today is also what I would refer to as Tall Tales Day. It's actually foreign affairs is supposed to be the emphasis. But from the withdrawal from Afghanistan to what's happening in Israel and Gaza and, of course, Ukraine, Tall Tales Day may be the more apt description. Melissa Kay of Locally Grown Radio in Wisconsin Rapids has our history. Boy, if this intro doesn't say it all, you're listening to Light Rock 105.3 FM with Nicolette Larson and A Lot of Love. Nicolette Larson was born this day in 1952. A Lot of Love was her big hit, a native of Helena, Montana. Passed away in 1997 at the age of 45, but not before giving us a Light Rock staple, Mr. Bach.
I always thought this was Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, no. No.
I never knew this. Because it sounds like Linda Ronstadt. To me, it does.
Yes. Yes. Do you know what happens in every era? Well, first off, let's welcome in Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio in
Good
Wisconsin
morning.
Rapids. How you doing? I've noticed that when some singer first kind of really makes it big, like Linda Ronstadt, there's always somebody else will get mistaken for them. And my best example, and this would be from the early 90s, when Mariah Carey was really first starting to become famous. And there's this song called Crush by Jennifer Page. And I always thought that it was Mariah Carey for the longest time.
Okay.
And so, I mean, and then more recently, Vanessa Carlton and Michelle Branch. Even they joke now, all these years later, that people still can't tell them apart either. And I keep coming back to it's the fact that local disc jockeys, you know, you don't have as many local disc jockeys anymore who announced every record, basically.
Yeah.
We don't do that anymore. Now it's, we're going to play 35 hits in a row. Like, yeah, and you'll learn nothing, you know? It's just a background music service. But if you want real locally grown radio, you go to Melissa Kay. How are things down there? Or up there?
You know, we're working hard at Locally Grown Radio at WFHR. I've been doing a lot of conversations with our local veterans because I'm working on the veteran series for my new show that will debut hopefully this next month.
Nice.
And it's Conversations with Melissa Kay. It will be on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 5 to 6.
Oh, okay.
Lovely.
I know. Can't wait for that. Let's see. We've got another birthday today. Spencer Davis from, I don't know how this coincidence worked out. He was part of the Spencer Davis Group, which had this big hit with Stevie Winwood on lead vocals. And you're like, wait, if that's Stevie Winwood, why is it the Spencer Davis Group? Well, it's his group, and he's the guitarist on there. So, born in Wales this day in 1939. Passed away just a couple of years ago at the age of 81. And I suppose I really could have queued this up better to Stevie Winwood's lyrics, but it's a great little jam. So I'm just going to continue talking over it until it's time for Stevie to sing. Oh, here it is now. We mentioned earlier that pianist Vince Guaraldi was born this day in 1928. And the Hoff is 72 years old today. David Hasselhoff.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow.
I Melissa. Eat a cheeseburger in your honor, sir. Chomp, chomp, chomp.
Melissa, any exposure to Baywatch, the original TV series?
No, not really. Aside of, well, you can't watch that.
Too much slow motion running for Melissa.
That's right.
I'm a Knight Rider guy, so.
There you go. Let's see. Luke Bryan, country singer, is 48 years old today.
I got that real good, feel good stuff up under the seat of my big black jacked up truck.
I get a feeling this is played on some station in Wisconsin Rapids every so often. You play a little Luke Bryan out there?
Oh, I'm sure it's played.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know
who
else?
It doesn't really sound like country to me, though.
No, I've never. It's always like there's a little bit of appropriation going on in the song, yeah. If you know what I'm saying. Let's wish a happy 77th birthday to Queen Camilla. There we go. And one more birthday here. Roy Kent, our one of our favorite characters from Ted Lasso. Actor and comedian Brett Goldstein is 44 years old today. And Greg, you've met him.
I've seen him. I've never met him.
Seen him. That's right. Yeah. You went to go see the performance. And I said, Greg, I'm looking for all these audio clips of music. It might take forever to find something clean from Brett Goldstein, but can you help us out? And Greg came through.
Howdy, y'all cowboys. My name is Ted Lasso, and I'm from Kansas. Wow.
Roy, if you die, do you want to be buried or cremated? Like, if you were hit by a bus today, what do I do?
Go after the bus driver and make him pay for what he did to me. Avenge me, Keely. Avenge me!
That's the Roy Kent we know and love. Let's see. Well, if you weren't able to watch Baywatch, I got a feeling you weren't at all watching the movie Endless Love with Brooke Shields back in 1981.
I wasn't born yet.
But you sure know the song by Lionel Richie and Diana Ross as the movie was released this day in 1981. Oh, yeah, here we go.
My love, there's only you.
I can tell this story now because it's nearly four decades old. We knew a couple that sang at weddings, and this was one of those songs that would come up during weddings in the 80s, mid to late 80s. And if they were ever in a church with a balcony where they were up and out of eyesight, they did the most dramatic interpretation of it to themselves. They're singing it straight, but they got the arms out and they're just like, I want to share. And they would reenact it for us. And we would just laugh and like, they never got busted. Thank God. But please know that about your wedding singers.
Oh, that makes me wish I had. Oh, see, I would have demanded that at my wedding.
I don't want just singing. I want a performance.
I want interpretive dance.
Yes.
Full theatrical piece.
My apologies to Greg. I completely lost my place on my list here. And there is one more birthday. Singer Regina Bell is 60 years old today. Had a few songs in her own right, but might be best known for a duet with Peebo Bryson from the original animated version of Aladdin.
That's my favorite line. Don't you dare close your eyes. I'm on a flying carpet. I am horrified right now.
This is the one they play over the closing credits, and it's just a lovely rendition. Melissa, anything else happening in beautiful Wisconsin Rapids that we should know about this week?
You know, we're just gearing up for our parking lot party that's happening in August, so we're lots of planning with that. I got to find a food truck.
You have to find a food truck?
Yeah.
Melissa has to find a food truck, everybody, that can be in Wisconsin Rapids when?
August 14th.
August 14th. Listeners, you are on notice. Help Melissa. Help yes, a girl
please.
Out.
Help me. We want tacos if that's possible, but we're not picky. Food truck's a food truck.
You want to give us an email or a phone number, or should they just if you know
melissa.k@civicmedia.us.
There you go. Yeah, only legitimate inquiries, please. Melissa, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Always good to see you guys.
I can't wait to see how this turns out. Back after this, you're up north.